Next headline. Outgoing VA Secretary Shulkin lashes out the White House officials looking to privatize veterans care. You know, I've often scratched my head. I like Shulkin. I thought, you know, he seemed to be like somebody who, you know, did good things at the VA and whatnot. But honestly, I don't understand. When I look at the VA, I think the VA should specialize in unique care that veterans require. One, post-combat related mental health, they should be peerless. Burns, they should be peerless. Treating amputees, they should be peerless. Treating the symptoms of Agent Orange, they should be peerless. Okay, so there's certain things that are unique to medical care of military members. All the rest of it, why do we need a VA that we have to go to? You know, why do I need to wait a month to go see a dermatologist? Why don't we have a, you know, a system of Medicare, just like Medicare, that you go to a doctor who accepts that in your community, and they take care of your issues, right, from warts to indigestion to whatever. Why do we need a separate facility for all of that? Now, the short answer is this, because it's jobs in congressional districts. That's what it is. It is jobs in congressional districts. But that doesn't make any sense to me. That veterans have to have this separate system, and I need to get a report and get somebody on to talk about this, but I wonder what the economic impact is to the federal government's bottom line if they said, okay, we're going to lay off, you know, 75% of the providers and administrators at the Veterans Administration. We will keep facilities open, but they will only have a very, very few, you know, specialties, amputees, mental health, and you will get world-class care when you come to see us. Everything else is going to be done by your local providers. So we're going to lay off all these people. And so whatever the VA costs now, I wonder what that privatizing, which to me makes infinite sense, I don't understand the case for not doing it. You know, why do I need to wait? Answer is, I shouldn't have to wait. I should be able to be seen in my community by a quality physician, and I should be able to be seen not in 4 months, not in 5 months. Yeah, what I initially got told to go see a dermatologist was, yeah, our first appointment isn't until June, so you're going to get referred out to somebody, you know, somebody in your, you know, you can go see. We'll send you the paperwork. Well, I didn't get any paperwork, so I called the VA and I said, hey, I was supposed to get an email, you know, allowing me to go be seen locally. Oh yeah, that hasn't been signed off yet, and it had been 2 weeks. I'm like, what the hell? So then I got a call the next day that said, oh, we can see you now. Okay, when? In 2 weeks. Okay. So, and so I went in. But again, we need a whole system of those doctors to treat when you could simply do, you know, some kind of an insurance program. Again, that doesn't make sense to me to have a separate health system for veterans. Maybe, and again, that health system only works if you live near a VA facility. If not, right? They have, the VA has, what, the Choice Program and some other programs that allow you to be seen locally as opposed to traveling 400 miles to go to the VA, which is crazy. So all across the country where there aren't VA facilities, what do? You go see a local provider and the VA pays for it. So, again, I've never understood, and I was conflicted because I thought Shulkin was, he said the right things. Okay, so he's fired. And he's in the news. Former Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin lashed out at political operatives behind his firing who, quote, want to put VA health care in the hands of the private sector in an op-ed for the New York Times Thursday morning. The piece, posted just a few hours after Shulkin's dismissal by President Donald Trump, served as the former VA's top official farewell letter to the department, as well as a warning to veterans advocates about the intentions of the White House veterans policies. Unfortunately, the department has become entangled in a brutal power structure, with some political appointees choosing to promote their agendas instead of what's best for veterans. What's best for veterans in a system that has historically been absolutely broke? And so you would have us believe that you're capable of fixing this, and the guy who, Admiral Jackson, is going to fix this too. And what you have is a bunch of deadweight people that pull down federal paychecks and benefits and don't provide care. And we see it across the country, and it's gone on for years. And you're going to fix that. You don't have the money to fix it, because in order to get higher quality care, you need to pay, be able to pay more to physicians and nurses. And if you can't do that, then you're going to get what you get. There's a reason why a large percentage of doctors don't, you know, English is not their first language at the VA. There's a reason for that. He goes on, quote, "These individuals who seek to privatize veterans' health care as an alternative to government-run VA care unfortunately fail to engage in realistic plans regarding who will care for more than 9 million veterans who rely on the department for life-sustaining care." Shulkin's job has been in jeopardy for weeks since a scathing Inspector General report in February criticized his decisions to have VA pay for his wife's airfare during an official department trip to Europe and to accept free tickets to Washington, to Wimbledon tennis tournament from an English businesswoman. In the days that followed, Shulkin accused a series of White House appointees and even some of his own staff of working to get him fired over policy disagreements with a sweeping health care. And again, when this happened, I said it at the time, but there's a clip out of the movie The Caine Mutiny. The strawberries. Let me see if I can find a little piece of video. Yeah. Humphrey Bogart plays a captain by the name of Quigg. Okay. And he's on the stand. And he's being accused of that the officers that and it's, and I'll tell you what, it's a great movie. Right? It's based on Herman Wouk's novel. Okay, Herman Wouk, you know, wrote epic stories. Van Johnson's in it. Fred McMurray. Yeah, my three sons, Fred McMurray. And these are all competent officers. Their shipmates during World War II aboard a destroyer minesweeper. Humphrey Bogart is in one of his greatest performances. Jose Ferrar's in it, Van Johnson, who else? Robert Francis, I don't know who he is. Frederick Murray, E.G. Marshall might be in it too. So we'll see if this can play without a commercial. Okay, so here you have Captain Quigg. He's on the stand, and hopefully this is the right piece of audio. But this is what Shulkin reminds me of.
I tried to run the ship properly with the book, but they fought me at every turn. The crew wanted to walk around with their shirt tails hanging out. That's all right. Let them. Take the tow line. Defective equipment. No more, no less. But they encouraged the crew to go around scoffing at me and spreading wild rumors about steaming in circles and then old Yellowstone. I was to blame for Lieutenant Merrick's incompetence and poor seamanship. Lieutenant Merrick was the perfect officer, but not Captain Quigg. But the strawberries, that's where I had them. They laughed at me and made jokes, but I proved beyond...
The strawberries. This is Shulkin, right? He thought it was a good idea to have his wife fly on the government dime to Europe that he rated at. And then he was, much like Andrew McCabe, was less than forthcoming when people made inquiries about it, all right? And he thought, as the head of the VA, that it's okay to take free tickets. And you get classes on this stuff. Okay? You get classes on this stuff. If you're working with the Kuwaiti military, when they come, they will give you gifts. Okay? You can accept a plaque. All right? When they hand you the $2,000 Rolex, you can accept that. Lieutenants and captains get taught that. But Shulkin doesn't know that you can't accept expensive, like, thousands of dollars of gifts from somebody, a business person?
On the shadow of a doubt and with geometric logic, that a duplicate key to the wardrobe I fucked did exist. And I'd have produced that key if they hadn't pulled the cane out of action. I know now they were only trying to protect some fellow officer. Naturally, I can only cover these things from memory. If I've left anything out, why, just ask me specific questions and I'll be glad to answer them one by one.
And in his hand, he's playing with these marbles. Right, they look like large steel ball bearings. He's constantly clicking them. Shot of Van Johnson. Shot of E.G. Marshall. Another guy I don't know. And I know this guy. It might be Tully. I don't recognize him. Yeah. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Hold on, there's one more clip. It's a little bit longer.
If you write anything on your computer, you need to get Grammarly.
Yeah, Grammarly. But that's what Shulkin reminds me of. They're out to get me. They're out to get me. Yeah, I know I did things wrong, but it was the strawberries, I tell you. The political appointees, they're out to get me. What does that have to do with you doing something wrong, and what does this have to do with the issue? Cannot the VA be privatized? I don't get it. And if it's long-term care that is the issue, then maybe the VA needs to be in that business. Because the VA, ultimately, when you go there, you see some very, very sad things, right? So the VA is a provider of last resorts. If people have other forms of insurance because they've led successful careers, then they've done pretty well. So... And if they haven't, right, as they get older and they have no other course of action, you know, you see many of them turn to the VA. And so maybe that gets added to the list of, you know, veterans homes around the countries. That the VA is very, very good at that, you know. So take the scarce resources, the part of the medical care for veterans that we'll retain are going to be in these areas. Everything else is going to be farmed out. Like the rest of the country, like Medicare patients. Because let me just tell you, it's not like veterans are getting better care than everybody else. If that was the case, then his argument would be valid. But to argue against privatization when you're giving subpar care makes no sense to me. All right. See if you'll recognize this guy's voice. And if you do, you know, let me know.
Captain, did you ever turn your ship upside down in a vain search for a key that did not exist?
I don't know what lies have been sworn to in this.
Okay, this is a little bit longer scene, okay? And I think this guy Tully is the prosecutor. He's the staff judge advocate. See if I can find a picture of him. If that's who this guy is. The Kane Mutiny. Tom Tully. Images. No, the guy. Oh, it's Jose Farrar. Who knew? Humphrey Bogart, Jose Farrar. Van Johnson, Fred McMurray, E.G. Marshall. Now, there's some big dudes in this movie. So it's Jose Ferrar. That's who you hear. That's whose voice you're going to hear first as the prosecutor. All right, so here you have it. This is the David Shulkin.
Captain, did you ever turn your ship upside down in a vain search for a key that did not exist?
I don't know what lies have been sworn to in this court, but I'd like to set you straight on this matter right here and now. A key definitely did exist.
May it please the court, the witness is understandably agitated by this ordeal, and I request a recess to give him a brief...
I don't want a recess.
That's E.G. Marshall, his defense counsel. It's a little reminiscent of A Few Good Men, isn't it, the scene?
I'll answer all questions right here and now.
Did you conduct such a search?
Yes, I did. As usual, my disloyal officers failed me and the key couldn't be found.
As a matter of actual fact, wasn't this whole fuss over a quart of strawberries?
Shulkin.
The pilfering of food in large amounts or small is one of the most serious occurrences on board ship.
Yes, but didn't you learn the meth boys had eaten the strawberries and that you were conducting a search for an imaginary key?
I repeat, the key was not imaginary. And I don't know anything about meth boys eating strawberries.
Captain, have you no recollection of a conversation with an Ensign Harding just prior to his leaving the Cane?
What about it?
Well, didn't Ensign Harding tell you that the meth boys ate the strawberries?
All that I remember is that he was very grateful for his transfer. His wife was ill in the States.
Captain, do you know where Ensign Harding is now?
Well, I have no way of knowing.
Ensign Harding is in San Diego. His wife is fully recovered. He has already been summoned and can be flown up here in 3 hours, if necessary. Would it serve any useful purpose to have him testify?
No. I don't see any need of that.
He gets nervous, okay? He reaches into his pocket and he pulls the ball bearings out, okay?
Now that I recall, he might have said something about mess boys, and then again he might not. I questioned so many men, and Harding was not the most reliable officer.
I'm afraid the defense has no other recourse than to produce Ensign Harding.
Now, there's no need for that. I know exactly what he'll tell you. Lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal. I tried to run the ship properly with a book, but they fought me at every turn. If the crew wanted to walk around with their shirt tails hanging out, that's all right. Let them. Take the tow line. Defective equipment. No more, no less. But they encouraged the crew to go around scoffing at me and spreading wild rumors about steaming in circles and then old Yellowstain. I was to blame for Lieutenant Merrick's incompetence and poor seamanship. Lieutenant Merrick was the perfect officer, but not Captain Queeg. Ah, but the strawberries. That's where I had them. They laughed at me and made jokes. But I proved beyond the shadow of a doubt and with geometric logic that a duplicate key to the wardrobe icebox did exist. And I'd have produced that key if they hadn't pulled the Cane out of action. I know now they were only trying to protect some fellow officer and...
Realizes that he's just revealed what a nut that he is. And he stops. And now you get separate shots of... E.G. Marshall, Jose Ferrar, Fred McMurray, Van Johnson. Very good. Bogart looks like an old man. Everybody else staring at him.
Naturally, I can only cover these things from memory. If I've left anything out, why, just ask me specific questions and I'll be glad to answer them one by one.
Too late. Too late. Ball bearings clicking. Van Johnson swallows. E.G. Marshall stares. Looks sideways. Another officer looks down. Jose Ferrar stares at him. Broad shot of the whole court.
No further questions, sir.
No further questions, sir. I think we've seen about enough of this jackass. So again, I was conflicted because I was conflicted because to me, intellectually, there is no need for a separate system for normal things, and I don't understand it. Right? The article goes on. In his op-ed, Shulkin said private sector doctors are ill prepared to handle the number and complexity of patients that would come from closing or downsizing VA hospitals and clinics. Particularly when it involves mental health needs of people scarred by the horrors of war. I agree with that. Okay? But that doesn't mean the rest of it can't be outsourced. He goes on, working with community providers to adequately ensure that veterans' needs are met is a good practice, but privatization leading to the dismantling of the department's extensive healthcare system is a terrible idea. But it's subcare, it's subpar care. Doc, if you were making the case for the Mayo Clinic, we'd be all about it. Yeah, we're not leaving. Hell no, we won't go. But it's the VA. It sucks in a lot of the country. And we're supposed to throw good money after bad? The department's understanding of service-related health problems is groundbreaking research, and its special ability to work with military veterans cannot be easily replicated in the private sector. But it's only in certain cities, and it's hit or miss in those cities whether they actually provide that care or not. So it's a hollow argument. Okay? We don't need a separate, I don't need a separate medical system to go get my psoriasis treated. Okay? That's not necessary. In an interview with NPR on Thursday morning, Shulkin also complained that the Trump administration prevented him from defending himself in the travel scandal, but would not say if any firm reason was given for his dismissal. See what I mean? The strawberries? They wouldn't let me defend myself. I have been falsely accused of things by people who wanted me out of the way. But despite these politically based attacks on me and my family's character, I am proud of my record, and I know that I acted with the utmost integrity. Unfortunately, none of that mattered. As I prepare to leave government, I am struck by a reoccurring thought that it should not be this hard to serve my country. Well, I will tell you this. If he thinks Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson is going to be a bobblehead for the Trump administration, you know, he's going to find out something different. But again, I think I speak for a lot of veterans, because I know I've had this discussion about the system. Why is it that veterans are forced to use this system when it doesn't work? Why is that? And wouldn't it be better for the VA to specialize on military-related injuries and maladies? As I said, prosthetics for amputees, burns, post-combat-related mental health, and I'm sure there's other, you know, assisted living facilities. Wouldn't that be better, to be world-class in that, as opposed to subpar care that veterans get forced into when they should be able to be treated in their community? And would doing it that way, would that be raise or lower the cost of veteran care? So if you could lower the cost of veteran care and you could increase the quality, doesn't that seem smart? It seems smart to me. You know, I know. So that's why I like Shulkin, but his argument didn't make sense to me. So I thought, you know what? Because I default to this. Well, Mac, you must be missing a point here. So now that I'm curious, I need to do some programming about it.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Cowboy music.
You stayed out with all your old friends. I've never tried to kiss you like
Toby Keith. I didn't want to. Sings in my key. Everybody knows that.
I'd rather go on loving blind girls than go on loving without you. I wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then. I wish I could start this whole thing over again. I'm not saying you would ever be
enough of that. Let me just read you the top five headlines. I'm not going to go into any of the details about it because I want to talk about the VA. Top five in the early bird. Boeing says no impact to military aircraft business after WannaCry cyber attack. number two coalition person killed, two coalition personnel killed by IED in Syria. One, if you haven't heard, is American. Three, they sought to help with their army dad deployed. Now they're barred from joining the military. Four, outgoing VA Secretary Shulkin lashes out at the White House, at White House officials, but not the president specifically, looking to privatize veterans care. Five, Mattis, Trump discuss using military funds for border wall. Now, one of the things I heard that's pretty interesting about this whole discussion that I did not know, because when I first heard it, I thought, can he do that? Can he cite national security? But there's a historical example. And I heard it brought up the other day, and that is General Eisenhower did that when he built the interstate system in the late 50s. What? So evidently that's a precedent. He saw the Autobahns in Germany, right, as a never, you know, had seen anything like that, as a way to, in terms of mobilizing the nation, to move large numbers of people great distances in short periods of time that might be required in the case of a nuclear attack. So he used defense. Now, could you imagine getting that system pushed through Congress? Oh, my God. Good luck with that deal. So he said it was a national security. Fell under the auspices of national security and used Department of Defense money to build the interstate system. Ike. Yeah, so I have to do a little bit of investigating and footnoting of that. Is that true? Is that true? And could the president make the same argument on the border? And use, do you say it's a national security issue? And many believe it is. I believe it is. In addition to being a political issue, at its root, in my opinion, it is a national security issue. Especially if you live down there. Those people that live down there near the border, they'll tell you stories that you make your hair fall out if it's not already falling out, like me. All right. So interesting. I want to talk about the VA, though. Let me give you a few more headlines, okay? U.S. officials say they're not conducting quote-unquote presence patrols in Manbij, Syria, but photos show otherwise. Next story from the Associated Press. The Kim family has made denuclearization vows in China before. Yeah, let me tell you, but I don't know that that dude wants to dance on the edge of the razor with the Chinese as well as the United States. Pick one or the other. No need to tee them both up. All right. Everybody knows that Russia is responding to this, being treated so unfairly by the West simply because they spread some nerve agent around a couple cities in the United Kingdom. Yeah. And everybody's pissed at them for that. Like, how unreasonable is that? We have nothing to do with it. All right. So I did a search. We were just talking about the VA, okay? And I was looking for what is the rationalization for privatizing the VA, and more importantly, what is the rationalization for not privatizing the VA. So anywho, so I found, so what I'm looking for is reputable publications that treat the issue. Here's, this is from The Hill, and it's pretty reputable. Pretty reputable publication. This was done in 2016, January 3rd of 2017. Quote, privatizing the VA would be an insult to more than 22 million veterans who risked their lives to defend our country, and it would significantly lower the quality of health care they received. This is a quote from Bernie Sanders on December 30th, 2016. The author, okay, is former Representative John Linder, a Republican from Georgia. I disagree. I served on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs in the 103rd Congress. VA waiting lists were at the top of our concerns. I once asked during a hearing why veterans shouldn't be allowed to go to their own doctor. The VFW and the American Legion angrily accused me of cutting veterans' benefits by privatizing their care. I discussed with then-Representative Dick Armey, Republican of Texas, and he told me about the World War II veteran in Irving, Texas, who was dying and in need of hospitalization. The nearest VA bed for him was in Houston. His wife couldn't afford to be in Houston with him, so she sat in their home in Irving, Texas, 250 miles away, waiting for the phone call to tell her that he had died and she could come collect his body. After 3 months, the call came. She drove to Houston, made the necessary arrangements. During that time, a small community hospital with empty beds was a block from their home. Why couldn't he have died there with her by his side? None of this made any sense. It was clear that the VA was serving the interests of the VA and not the veteran. The VA's strongest supporters at the time were World War II and Korea vets. The leadership of the veteran service organizations were from that group and were wined and dined by the VA. The VSOs were invested in the status quo. They believed that they were in charge and brooked no changes. I was a Vietnam-era veteran. We were not celebrated. We didn't wear our uniforms off base. We didn't come home to parades. We didn't join the VFW. Some of our numbers formed their own groups, but most of us just disappeared into the community. We're not invested in the VA. We're old now. Those who need hospitalization may still end up miles away from their home in a facility indistinguishable from a warehouse. One floor might be occupied by AIDS sufferers or those addicted to alcohol or drugs. If you're admitted to the hospital, you're at risk. It's just easier that way. Meanwhile, the reports to Washington will be rosy. Bonuses will be passed out to the warehouse management. And you, too, will die alone. The VA should be privatized because government simply doesn't see individuals. Government sees groups. Quote, you say you want to do more for vets. We increased the VA budget by 8.5%. There, we took care of the vets. Meanwhile, Jason Simkakowski overdosed in Toma, Wisconsin. Sorry about that. Stuff happens. Government bureaucrats work for their bosses. Whether the program is food stamps, farm subsidies, or veterans care, the individual at the receiving end of the program is merely the means to an end. The end is the pay and the bonuses. If the boss is pleased, you will be rewarded. There is a role for government in veterans' health care. It is not the common cold, gallbladder surgery, or dentures. Not even cancer. There are private facilities with newer tools and techniques that are better equipped for patient care. The VA should first commit to shortening the long lines waiting for determination of eligibility for VA medical care. The government's role in veterans care should then be focused entirely on matters that are the result of war. The traumatic brain injury, amputations, post-traumatic stress, and the rehabilitation from those injuries are unique and special. and we should dedicate the entire medical resources of our government towards improving the lives of the wounded and their families. Medical needs reforms. Wow. I need to save the article because that was my question. Okay. I haven't read anything about it, but this is just me and other of my friends talking. Medicare needs reform as to reimbursement formulas and regulatory burdens, but it is the most patient-centric of all of our government healthcare programs. VA eligible benefits should be enrolled in Medicare and allowed to make their own healthcare decisions. If that is privatizing VA healthcare, this old vet is for it. It is reported that President-elect Donald Trump is interviewing managers from Cleveland and Mayo Clinics for VA secretary. Instead, he should be talking to Chainsaw to Chainsaw Al. John Linder was a member of Congress from Georgia for 18 years before retiring in 2010. If you would like to be added to his distribution list, please send an email address to johnlinder@yahoo.com. Interesting. Okay. Now, here's another one. This is by John Wells, opinion contributor. This is on, so this is a week after that article was written, this article comes out. Okay. It's entitled The Perils and Pitfalls of Privatization of the VA. A few weeks ago, President-elect Donald Trump's transition team revealed that they are discussing a revamp of the Department of Veterans Affairs healthcare system to reflect public-private partnerships. Trump and his team have met with Cleveland Clinic CEO Toby Cosgrove, a supporter of private healthcare plans for veterans. While some form of private participation in veterans healthcare is definitely advantageous and probably necessary, the new administration should proceed carefully. A brainchild of the Koch-funded, now the Kochs are big-time, rich, government, Republican establishment dudes, Conservative Veterans of America, VA privatization has caught fire among conservative groups as a solution to the VA healthcare crisis. It has drawn the ire of the established veterans organizations who are firmly opposed to privatization. Some have charged that the privatization idea is an attempt to solve real-world problems with ideological rather than logical, with a logical approach. Other small government groups argue that the VA in its current form cannot properly care for the medical needs of the nation's veterans. Actually, both are right. The Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act, enacted in 2014, was seen by some as a stopgap program to allow VA time to fix their access to care problem. Others saw it as the first step towards privatization. The program, enacted, allows veterans to seek private care if they live more than 40 miles away from a VA medical facility. Veterans who cannot secure an appointment within 30 days are also eligible. Choice, as it is colloquially known, was an excellent compromise between private and public health care. Unfortunately, its implementation has been terrible. That's no joke. That's no joke. That was my comment. That's not actually in the article. Choice envisioned a quick pre-approval with little red tape. That has not been the case. Approval requests are not resolved in a timely manner. Now, that just happened to me, okay? So I called up and I said, hey, I need to see a dermatologist. I went and I did like a checkup, and they referred me to dermatology, and this was in February. They told me they could see me in June. And then I would get an email, and I didn't get the email, and I called, and they said it was on the department head's desk, still waiting 2 weeks later for his approval. So my small sample is testament to that sentence. Approval requests are not resolved in a timely manner. Telephone calls often go unanswered, and messages are not returned. Mine was. Once approved, the VA continues to require pre-approval for every stage of care. Undue delays prevent the veteran from receiving the expedited treatment intended by Congress. Why do they do that? Because they want to make sure that you don't get access to too much health care, which runs their costs up. Okay? That's why those things are put in place. Additionally, medical professionals are forced to wait an inordinate amount of time for payments. Payments are often delayed 90 to 120 days or longer. The bureaucratic morass has forced some providers to reconsider their participation in the CHOICE program. So if you're a doctor, you say, okay, what are the reimbursement rates? Well, they're akin to, I don't know if this is a fact, but let's just say it is. They're akin to Medicare. Okay, we like Medicare. We don't like Medicaid. Medicaid pays, their reimbursement rate is too low for the services I provide. I can make more money doing private people and Medicare people. Medicaid are at the bottom of my list. I don't see them very often. Okay, got it. And now once I accept them for these veterans in CHOICE, now I'm going to have to wait 3 to 4 months to get reimbursed? Not sure I want to do that as a physician, okay? All right, the problems with CHOICE are systemic in nature and can be fixed by the application of sound management principles. Okay, and it goes on. Establishing a new public-private program on top of the floundering CHOICE program will result in another flawed implementation. The new secretary must first correct the problems with CHOICE and only then expand it incrementally as necessary. In moving towards privatization, administrations must be aware of other pitfalls. There will be significant congressional resistance from both sides of the aisle. This will be fueled by the opposition of virtually every veterans organization. Why, though? The administration may very well lose this confrontation. While cost should not be the deciding factor, it is a relevant factor. This is what I was kind of interested in. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office reported in December 2014 that the full range of services provided by the VA would cost 21% more in the private sector at Medicare reimbursement rates. The report included the disclaimer that they did not have access to the latest VA data. Still, the estimate makes sense. Medical providers do not have to pay rent at their VA medical facility. Since the government is self-insured, there is no need for insurance. The equipment they use is paid for by the VA, taken from the GSA schedules, or procured via bulk contract purchases. Support staff is provided at no cost to the provider. While a more in-depth study needs to be conducted with current data, the result will probably be the same, and that is a 21% increase if the private sector handles that. The administration should also avoid closing VA medical facilities. Cutbacks of military medical facilities due to base realignment and closure commission activity has resulted in a significant decrease in the number of Department of Defense operated activities. While recent combat casualties have been lower than in wars previous, a future high casualty conflict is always a possibility. VA medical facilities, especially the inpatient hospitals, must remain as a backup to military medical facilities should casualties surge. In the case of a high-intensity war, VA facilities may become a strategic asset. Without question, some form of privatization is necessary for veteran health care. This is especially true in rural areas and in the tribal areas where VA facilities are hours away. Additionally, there are some services that cannot be completely provided by the VA. Privatization should be on an as-needed basis, however. It should be tailored to local needs rather than imposed nationally. In achieving the proper balance, however, the VA needs to ensure that they provide quality care efficiently. John B. Wells is a retired Navy commander and an attorney practicing military and veteran law. He is executive director of the nonprofit Military Veterans Advocacy Incorporated. And then in the New York Times, there's a debate, and so what they do is they have on their opinion page in the Times. This is in June of 2016. Should the veterans' health care system be privatized? That's the question. And they have a couple guys who debate it. And so one of the debaters are Philip Longman. He is the author of The Best Care Anywhere, Why VA Care Would Work Better for Everyone. He serves on the Commission on Care, which has been tasked by Congress and President Obama with crafting a strategic plan for the future of veterans' health care. And then the other debater is a guy named Avik Roy, A-V-I-K. Avik Roy is the opinion editor at Forbes. He co-chaired the Fixing Veterans Healthcare Task Force, along with former Representative Jim Marshall, Democrat from Georgia, former Senator Bill Frist, Republican Tennessee, and Michael Cussman, a former Veterans Health Administration director. Neither one of these is very long, so let me touch on their points real quickly. This is from Avik Roy, titled, Veterans Should Enjoy the Same Healthcare Options as All Americans. When Senator Bernie Sanders proposed a plan entitled Medicare for All, he electrified progressives who regard Medicare as the health reform benchmark. Senior citizens enrolled in Medicare enjoy the security of knowing that they can receive quality care regardless of their health or financial status. They have the option to receive care from private physicians and private hospitals. They even enjoy the option of deputizing private insurers to administer their Medicare benefits. So why does Sanders oppose giving veterans these options? The problem with veterans health care were brought to the fore in 2014 when whistleblowers found that a number of veterans affairs facilities were denying care to veterans in need and concealing those denials to watchdog government groups. The common sense response of most Americans and most veterans was simple. Give veterans who can't get convenient care from the VA the option of obtaining that care from private doctors, hospitals, and insurers. A poll by Concerned Veterans for America and the Terrence Group of more than 1,000 veterans found that 88% agreed that eligible veterans should be given a choice to receive medical care from any source that they themselves choose. And 95% agreed that it was extremely or very important to have the option to seek the best care possible, even if that care was provided by a non-VA facility. There's plenty of veterans who are happy with VA health care, and those who have been lucky enough to stay off the VA's waiting list often do well. But why on earth would we deny other veterans the ability to seek care from qualified private providers when those on Medicare, Medicaid, and Obamacare can't? Even the Veterans Health Administration's own employees enjoy a vast array of private health care and coverage options that are denied to the veterans they serve. We hear a plethora of excuses from opponents of reform. Antagonists say that veterans can only receive good care in a closed system, in which veterans are forbidden to seek care from other sources. The naysayers shriek about privatization, as if health care delivered by private physicians is something to be feared. And they claim that if veterans seek care from private sources, those that prefer the traditional VA will have inferior care. Modern proposals to reform the VA, like one recently put forth by Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, who's a Republican from Washington, address these objections. They devote public resources to improving the quality of traditional VA care while also giving veterans the option of seeking coverage and care from well-established, high-quality private resources. Those who are ideologically committed to believing that government services are always better than private services may be unwilling to consider evidence to the contrary. And leaders of public sector unions oppose allowing veterans to seek care from private hospitals instead of public ones because they'd receive less income from workers' dues. But everyone else, the answer is obvious. But for everyone else, the answer is obvious. So, again, I'm the bigger picture, the piece of the strategic position of VA hospitals relative to a war in which we have massive casualties. Is that part of the strategic plan? And why are veteran service organizations opposed to this? Again, when you see numbers like 88 and 95%, 88% agree that eligible veterans, these are veterans, should be given a choice to receive medical care from any source that they themselves choose. And 95% agree that it was extremely or very important to have that option to seek the best possible care, even if that care was provided by a non-VA facility. So that seems like not a radical position. Again, so there a number of RFIs, right? Now, Philip Longman, the headline for his defense of the VA healthcare system is this: the veterans healthcare system is being unfairly attacked. Most Americans these days have never served in the military. Fewer still have received care in a Department of Veterans Affairs hospital or even known someone who has. This gap between military and civilian life creates an opening for a powerful array of interests intent on eroding public support for our veterans' healthcare system. Well, hey, Phil, can I tell you something? The biggest problem you have isn't the public. It's your veteran clientele who keep telling you that the care they receive from their private doctors is much better from what they receive at the VA. That's your bigger problem. Okay, I digress. The media, the enemies of the VA include the Koch brothers, who, fearful of the spread of socialized medicine, are funding a well-coordinated campaign, including support for the group Concerned Veterans of America, to discredit its only true example in the United States, which is the veterans' healthcare system. And they include giant corporate healthcare systems that stand to gain billions of taxpayer dollars from the privatization or outsourcing of veterans' health care. I don't know anything about that, and to be honest with you, I don't care about the Koch brothers. I don't care about their funding. I don't care about any of that. I want the questions that we have as veterans who rely on the VA answered. For these reasons, okay, so he's firing up the black helicopter, many Americans would do well to scrutinize whether what they may think about, whether what they think they know about the VA healthcare is true. For example, it will surprise many to learn that more than 60 peer-reviewed studies, including a recent RAND report commissioned by Congress in the wake of the VA scandal in 2014, show that the quality of VA care is comparable to, and in many cases superior to, that offered by private providers. I had to click on the link for the RAND study so I can read that. Another recent study compared quality metrics and mental health found in every case VA performance was superior to that of the private sector by more than 30%. The Veterans Health Administration also offers, quote, the best care anywhere when it comes to preventative care, outpatient processes, and outpatient outcomes. How is this possible? The VA has a near-lifetime relationship with its patients, which gives it incentives often lacking elsewhere in U.S. healthcare to invest in its patients' long-term healthcare. Moreover, the VA model, the different specialists involved in a patient's care work as a team using a common electronic medical record and evidence-based protocols. With its lack of profit motive and ability to operate as a system, the VA avoids most of the redundant treatment and fragmentation of care that has made contacts with the rest of the healthcare system the third leading cause of death in the United States. I would tell you that that's bullshit, and here's why I tell you that. Because you don't see the same doctor at the VA, hardly ever a second time. So this team thing sounds great. But I've never seen the same doctor more than once. This is the one reason why all major veteran service organizations strenuously oppose privatizing the VA. Another is that simply handing veterans a voucher would not only result in unsustainable explosion in costs, but it would lead to the closing of many VA facilities, including those specializing in combat-related traumas and disabilities. This would give veterans fewer choices, not more. Where it lacks capacity, the VA already makes extensive use of private doctors and has plans to build a much larger network of integrated community providers in the future. To be sure, VA care does have some deficiencies, but the next time you hear about one, ask the compared to what question. Congressional grandstanding and sensational headlines notwithstanding, wait times for the VA, for example, are generally in line with those experienced by patients in private health care systems. I find that not believable. Most of what's wrong with the VA, like a severe shortage of primary care doctors, reflects larger problems in the deeply dysfunctional U.S. healthcare delivery system as a whole. And then they go through a series of back and forth. So, anyway, the VA. Interesting stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Michael Musselman's going to join us. So don't touch that. Yeah, you know, to me, it's an interesting conversation because I'll beg ignorance on the larger questions of the VA system. But I know my experience. I know the experience of my friends. And so what I would tell you is privatization of certain things makes sense to me. Now, I guess the question would be, okay, if you do that, what does that do to costs overall? And what does that do to the system overall? Can you create a VA system that only deals with combat wounds and the rest of your stuff goes away? Right? The rest of your coverage goes to Medicare. Does that increase Medicare even more if veterans are included in that? But I do know this. It's tough. I think that one of the complaints you hear from veterans is when you go to the VA, you have a lot of doctors that aren't born in the United States. And you don't see the same doctor more than once. And so, really, who are you dealing with? Right? The VA doesn't pay the kind of wages that attract the best doctors. You know? And so that's who works with you. So, and Mike is probably, Mike is probably a case in point where he misdiagnosed for years relative to an issue that he had with his gallbladder. You know, acid reflux disease, all the rest of that stuff. And then he goes to a private doctor and they say, yeah, you need to have your gallbladder taken out, man. And he does that, and guess what? It all goes away. So to me, it's interesting, the privatization of the VA. I'll devote some time to it, and we'll get some people on the program that can make us smart about it. But I, to me, what makes sense is a more streamlined VA, one that's very efficient relative to processing your claims. One that's very efficient in processing your ability to be seen by another doctor. One that's very efficient in combat injuries. TBI, post-combat related mental health, prosthetics, burns. Yeah, they should be world class in that stuff. So they should be sleek and they should be combat oriented. Can you mothball space at facilities and not close them down if they have a strategic place in the plan to treat mass casualties in a large casualty war? You could probably do that. You could probably maintain facilities. But if it's about delivering better health care, then I don't know that you can make a great case for not allowing veterans to have more of their care privatized. And so, but that's the question. What is the case for not having it privatized? Because it seems when you lay a little bit of common sense to veterans' health care, it seems like it ought to be privatized. Okay, it seems like it ought to be privatized. If that gets you better care, then it seems like you would be driven. It surprises me, though, that it would cost that much more if you got rid of all the personnel and all the overhead that would go with it. But we'll get that information. All right, we're going to take a break. Michael Musselman coming up next on a Friday edition, Good Friday, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.